truth?
I'm all ears.
Okay. The truth.
I always tell the truth, even when I lie.
Why do you find it so hard to believe?
Why do you find it so easy?
It's never been easy!
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
All I'm offering is the truth. Nothing more.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Talk. I'm your host, Marco DeGeorge, and I am here once again with Natalie Beleitch. Hello.
Hello, Marco.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
So if you're back with us, welcome back. And if you're joining for the first time, we are on this podcast. We'd like to talk about just about everything, but really it's artistic centric. And we talk about things art related. We talk about acting, which is really what we do. I'm an actor, director, producer, teacher, you know, in that realm. I'm a co-founder of an acting conservatory that's located in South Orlando called Truthful Acting Studios. And so that's really what we're here to talk about. But there's an interesting thing how acting overlaps with life. So many times we're on here just talking about life.
Yeah.
So you never know what you're going to get.
That's correct.
But, you know, we came on today and thinking, okay, so I think since we're still at the beginning of Truthful Talk and this is episode 2, we should probably talk a little bit about acting in general, as far as what acting is and how it all works. And one of the things I typically do with my classes as we're getting into kind of the depth of acting is I like to educate the students on how they function as a human being and then how that relates into the art. And it's something that that I typically call the duality of the human psyche. And typically what that just means is understanding the voices in your head, understanding what drives you, the motivating factors, mm-hmm. and how all of that works. Because really, you know, and you can get into some really deep psychology with this. I'm going to try to give it to you as simplistic as possible, but it's also pretty profound when you kind of take a step back and look at it. This most simplistic thing I can say is that there's two voices represented inside of you. Now, we've all seen this in cartoons. I don't know. I mean, growing up, we had like these cartoons and there was like an angel and a devil mm-hmm. on your shoulder and they're both talking to you. That represents the mm-hmm. two voices in our head. Mm-hmm. It's the two sides of you. It's the part of you that is very enthusiastic, that wants to do something, that wants to go out and play and take mm-hmm. a chance, mm-hmm. and the part of you that's very cautious and doesn't want to do that. And so that duality exists as something we call our logical mind and our emotional core. The logical mind, think about that as your head. It's the thoughts that you have. And your emotional core, we kind of call that your gut, like almost like in your stomach area. That's mm-hmm. where we first feel things. And those are two different sides of us that propel us through life. Logical thought is the part of you that is thinking about things. You think about the past, you think about the future. That's also where our worry center comes in, or our fear center, where we're worried about what's going to happen. We're worried about things we've done, how it may affect the future, all of those things. And that's the part of us that is also known as our survival instinct. Your logical mind, its goal is to keep you alive. So it wants to gather as much information as possible so that way it can run algorithms on how to keep you safe and alive going forward. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And we all have it. I mean, you worry about stuff, right, Nat?
All the time. Yeah, yeah.
As a human being, I think we do.
As a human, and people forget that. That is part of being human, is to have those two sides.
Yeah, we worry. But then there's the part of us that is called the emotional core, And that side of you is the part that is present, meaning that's the part of you that exists right here, right now. The logical mind, you can think about like an onboard computer system. It's like an onboard AI system is what I like to call it, meaning it takes input. It's like a computer. You need to feed input into it for it to then run an algorithm to then try to predict what's going to happen next. It's always trying to predict what's going to happen next so it can prepare you for every next moment in your life. When you worry about something, that's your logical mind trying to predict what could happen. So you are prepared for all of the different scenarios, including worst case scenario that could happen. So that's how, kind of how that works. But your emotional core is the part of you that's right here, right now. That's the part of you that gets excited about doing something. The part of you that is just ready to just run with reckless abandonment and do whatever you want. It's what we call your love center. And those two sides are what make up your psyche, meaning it makes up the voices in your head. And I think this is a very interesting topic, an important topic to talk about. Usually in class, I take a lot of time to talk about this. I have diagrams and all sorts of presentations and everything else. We're going to do my best to just straight talk about it without it going into too much psychobabble. But I think it's an important thing to understand, because when we enter the realm of art, so in society or in just your normal life, we are mostly governed by logical thought. Logical thought is everything you have learned to this point in your life. And it's almost like the guidelines we live life by. It's the right and wrong of life. It's what you should do versus what you shouldn't do. And this is in your family, in your education, in your work environment, in just your culture. There's all of these guidelines, right? This is what you should do. This is what you shouldn't do. And we learn these throughout our entire childhood into adulthood by the things that we do that we're supposed to. If we do it right, we get rewarded. If we do it wrong, we get punished. So it's kind of like inbred into our system. And so the logical mind, that's its function. Its function is to learn, just like AI. Its function is to learn as much as it can. But then there's the other side of us that feels. So the logical mind is thought only. It does not feel. It's binary in nature, meaning it only has one of two states. It's looking, is something safe or is something unsafe? And its goal is to keep you safe in order to keep you alive. That's its primary goal. Your emotional core is love, passion, desire. That's the part of you that is always looking for something better. And many times those two sides of you are at odds. Now, while we think our way through most of life, the thing about art is a feeling level of expression. That's what art is we're expressing, we have something inside of us that we feel and we're expressing it out in some way. A painter expresses it on a canvas. A sculptor expresses it through marble. A musician expresses it through an instrument, but it's a feeling that we do. And an actor, we express it right through our entire body, through our emotion, through our voice, through our physicality. It's through everything. But it's a feeling that we express. But in life, for the most part, we're out of balance. We are more governed by what we think than what we feel. Our thinking keeps our feeling in check. So one of the first things we have to learn when we're starting to become an artist, and especially an actor, is that we need to get that back in balance. Our logical thought is good. That's our analysis. That's going to be the guidelines we have. That's learning. That's our ability to learn a script. That's our ability to comprehend material. That's our ability to just understand storytelling. All of that is going to be our logic, very important. But then we need to learn how to let go of that, because we can't be on stage performing, thinking about what to say or thinking about what to do or worrying about, am I doing it right or wrong, or is the audience enjoying it, or whatever that is. We also can't be in front of the camera acting worrying about is the director liking it or thinking about, am I doing this right or wrong? We have to let go of that and have the ability to let go of logical thought and purely exist in a present moment, in the right here, right now, without our fear getting in the way. That is so difficult to do. So difficult. And I know, you know, some people will say, well, I'm always in the present moment because I'm always right here, right now. And I'm like, no. You're physically here, but mentally you're somewhere else. And that's where we have to like understand the difference. Yeah, physically you're always in the right now. But if you're thinking about something in the past or thinking about something in the future, you're not in the present moment. So our acting training, learning about the duality, is learning by a sheer act of will how we have to take all of our focus and put our focus into the present moment. In acting, there's this thing called being in the moment or committing to the moment. I remember when I was first learning acting and I'd be told that. I'd be told, yeah, you need to be in the present moment. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, sure, okay. And, you know, like an instructor would be like, are you in the moment? I'm like, yeah, I'm in the moment.
I'm
like,
right here.
You know what I'm talking about? Sure. I had no idea what they were talking about. Because it's like we're always in the moment, right? It's like I had no idea what they were talking about. And they never really explained it, but I didn't want to be that person mm-hmm. that said, I don't understand. I went through years of not understanding what the moment mm-hmm. was. Because aren't we always in it? And the thing is, no, if we're thinking, if we're worrying, if in any way we have logical thought, logical control, fear, any of that going on, and we're in our head worried about the next moment in our acting, we're not in the moment. In fact, we're trying to control our performance. And that ends up making the performance very stale, false, manipulated, boring, really.
Showy. Actory.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Like showy and actory, because that we have this. So what happens is we have this vision in our head of what we think it should be. And what we end up doing is trying to then replicate what that vision is.
Yes.
We're working from thought versus working from the moment. And I'm always going back to, you know, thinking about the duality, and it's something Master Yoda said, right? It was do or do not. There is no try.
Yes.
Lucas was brilliant, right? I mean, is he a great director? I don't know. But is he brilliant in his storytelling and crafting? Yes, he absolutely is. And he really understood it. I mean, going all the way back to there, I mean, you know, of understanding, that's kind of what the whole initial Star Wars was kind of exploring, mm-hmm. the difference between the logical thought and that control, which was the Sith, and then the emotional core and the feelings, which were the Jedi. And it's, you know, it's kind of like that, the combination of the two. And it's an interesting thing. So really this duality is so important to understand if you're trying or want to become an actor or you're exploring really any art form. We first have to learn the very basic psychology of these two voices in your head. Now, the reason I say there's two voices, they both sound like you. But the difference is one is inspiring. It's almost like a kid. One is like a child voice that you have inside of you that is excited. It's passionate. It wants to go and just play. That's your actual true voice. That's the voice that comes from your emotional core. That's the voice that is your true self. Your true self voice is not critical or judgmental about anything, because criticism and judgment come from fear. Fear is a faculty that's governed by the logical mind. Ego is a faculty that's governed by the logical mind. So when you have a critical voice in your head, especially a self-judgment voice, any sort of negative thought that you have in your head about you, that's actually not your voice. What happens is part of the logical mind, right? The logical mind is trying to keep you safe. So it learns, just like AI, it learns and adapts. So when you go through an experience, let's say you went through an experience in early childhood and with a peer, then you were bullied or made fun of. Well, the logical mind takes that in and says, okay, we had a negative result of an experience. And it's because this happened, you know, this X factor happened, and it led to being made fun of, or it led to being criticized by a peer. So we must not let that happen again. And let's say that the peer was making fun of you for something, or telling you you're not good enough, or telling you you're not smart enough, or whatever that is. So now you fast forward into the future, and you're going down a similar path. Well, the logical mind doesn't want you to have the same experience. So what it does is it reflects back that voice that you heard in the past, which is what this other person told you. You're not good enough. Instead, though, it reflects it back to you in your own voice. So we hear it in our head that, oh, we're not good enough. Oh, we can't do this. Oh, we don't have what it takes to do this. And really, that's somebody else's voice in your head. It's not yours. Sometimes it's one person and it's very easy to identify. Sometimes it's not as easy to identify because it could be a collection of several people that told you something similar. But one of the first things we need to do is identify that and say, okay, whose voices are actually in your head? Because when you can think about, when you can identify where does that negative thought come from, when you realize it's actually not you, you can deal with it better. You can start processing through that better. The reason why this is so important is as an actor, as an artist, we need the ability to step into a very vulnerable state. We need the ability to let go of logic and step into the present moment and allow ourselves to be extremely raw and vulnerable. But if we have all of these negative self-thoughts, it's going to stop us from doing that. And we won't have the ability to fully feel. We won't have the ability to process emotion. We won't have the ability to fully step in a moment. So we go through this as actors, and I train my actors into this as part of the process to start that self-healing that they need to do in order to eventually get to the point where, one, they feel more confident in themselves. They feel better about who they are. They start healing from past trauma, and then they have a greater ability in the character work, in the acting work, in everything they do. So this is why I wanted to talk about this today. It's something I think is very fundamental and important. And even if nothing else, as I train actors, I say, even if nothing else, if you get out of it the lesson that the negative voices in your head are not really you, that's so profound that it can be life-changing. But all you need to do is start doing the work. Anytime you have a self-critical thought in your head, write down the thought and then start thinking, who told me that? Where did that come from? How is, you know, Natalie, how has your journey been with any of that?
What you said about being willing to do the work, I think that's a big, I think that's a massive step, because a lot of people don't want to, or let's say they're used to this victimization in their own mind, you know, so they're really stuck with that negative self-talk. So it's very, very difficult for some people. It's not impossible. It's just if someone is open to this advice, this teaching, actually, because it is the teaching that goes as part of this process, you give yourself that time and that space to start analyzing. And then it becomes literally a lifelong, lovely journey about slowly peeling away the things that have hindered us because it came from fear. So it's like it really is profound. It really is an exercise. It is a practice of taking that responsibility to say, okay, even if it's for the first thing I look in the mirror or whatever it is, you start doing that little by little and something opens up. There's like a valve that starts happening. And I think in this process, especially at this, when you're talking about duality, you're trying to peel away all of that within you that came from a fear, the logical mind place, so you can get to the valve of being truthful and open and honest as much as you can, because that character is a real person.
Yeah.
So if you can push that away, your own fear that's practiced, you get there through the work, it does work. Some people might see it as foo-foo or, you know, magical or cult-like or whatever, because they think like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I was going to be doing what they interpret as spiritual work, as what I interpret it as spiritual work. And Chekhov interpreted it as that way. Meisner, the same. There is something that is there that is very profound. And unless someone is willing to accept that and say, okay, let me do the work, let me do what this teacher is at least telling me to do, give it a shot. And little by little, you say, well, you know, like you're an idiot in your head, and I can use expletives, and I can sit here for hours about it. And you're like, who said that? Just the question alone. Yeah. You don't even have to have the answer. But later on, that instinct or that whatever it is will say, yeah, that was your mother. Or that was the boy that was sitting in the back of the bus.
Yeah.
Or that was little. It's like a conversation that you are beginning to have with yourself, your true self, to push that away. And I think that's a wonderful exercise that anybody can do at any time, but you have to do the work. I heard that's one thing it says, the only time that work comes before success is in the, no, the only time that success comes before work is in the dictionary. Like you have to do the work first.
Yes.
I don't know if that's, but anyways, I just, I can't stress that enough about just giving it a shot and to do it. It's helpful.
And it really is important. As when we learn this thing called acting, from the outside, we think it's more of a logical process. We think, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, I'll get cast in something. I'm going to have to memorize the script, which is logical. I'm going to make some choices and understand who the character is. That's going to be all logical. And then I'll just go and just do it. I'll just recite the lines and, you know, follow the direction, and it's going to be fine. And it's like, no, that's, you know, once we start learning acting, you realize that's not what it's about at all.
No.
Even, you know, Sanford Meisner, who's our kind of great mentor of the approach we have here at the studio, you know, he said acting is not a putting on of masks to become the character. It's a peeling away of masks layer by layer to reveal the character. And that's one of the most profound things about acting that you can realize. It's not that we take our socially conditioned self from the world filled with all these fears and criticisms and self-doubt and then just put some sort of character mask on top of that. It doesn't work because we're building it on our own quote unquote character that we play in the world that we've developed over a lifetime. That's still a character you're playing. What we need to do is we need to strip away all of the social masks we wear, which are all of the defenses and all of the things, the way you respond when you're with family or friends or at work or wherever you are. We wear these things called social masks. They're protective boundaries that allow us to navigate through life safely, that allow us to fit in and blend in and not be criticized. Well, we have to peel all of those away until the only thing that's left is our raw, vulnerable self with nothing to defend. And that is one of the most scariest places to be in the world, is to be completely raw and vulnerable. Now, I say it's the scariest place in the world. In the very beginning of the work, it's terrifying. After you do it for a while, it's actually very liberating. Mm-hmm. It feels much better after when you learn how to do it. But in the beginning, we're so used to having a shield up. We have these walls, for example, that are built. It's scary to bring those walls down. But it's only when we bring all of those walls down, we're at our vulnerable self, that's the essence now that we use to create and build character from. Mm-hmm. And so we learn that, you know, and so many students, they'll take the class and they'll think, oh, I took it to act, mm-hmm. like you said. And now all of a sudden they're exposed to all this and they're like, wait a minute, I just wanted to do acting. Right. It's like, this is acting.
And their idea, which really is not their fault either. It is from the social conditioning or how they interpreted what they saw from on television in the plays, that they thought that it was just as easy as, I'm so beautiful and I have so much charisma that I can walk in anywhere without any training and get the job and learn the line. That's all you need to do. And it's such an incredible... It's an awakening. It's an insult to people who do all this work. That even if you, let's say, did get that opportunity, someone plucked you out of, you know, wherever it was, and they said, please come and we're going to make room for you and you're going to be in front of the camera and you're going to audition for us and you're like, you're going to get the job. Like, here it is. At best, that's all you can do. At best is play that character over and over again if you're lucky enough to have like a, let's say, cult following or, you know, some kind of whatever that is where it's like, wow, she has no training, but she did it anyways. Just personality, if you will. Because eventually that person, if they really want to search for themselves that artistry and acting, they're going to have to go back to class and start it anew, start it afresh, because you can't go into the depths that wonderful directors want to explore with you. If you just, you know, came in with a very shallow way of thinking that it's just about the image or it's just about how I look on camera, for a little bit it could work for you, but in the long run, it's not going to. Eventually, you'll have to question, do I really want to do this work? And you'll wind up in acting class if it's a yes.
Yeah. And it is, because you're right, there's these misconceptions that we have. It's one of the things that's like really acting 101. I start going over misconceptions of acting versus the truths. And probably the first misconception of acting is that it's a talent that you're born with.
Mm-hmm.
People believe that you either have it or you don't. And part of that belief is the desire to be able to achieve greatness in the field without having to do the work.
Yes.
It's a desire.
A strong desire.
And we watch, you know, actors and we see the greats do their thing. We don't realize that, you know, they've been working 20, 30, 40 years on this craft. That's why they're so good. They're decades into it. But we're not familiar with their entire journey. So we look at them and say, well, I could do that.
Right. And then on my side, my mother, very young, she just said, you want to be an actress? They would have found you by now if you were going to be.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it shattered me, but I'm still working all that out. But basically, she's like, hello, like that's how it happens. It does not happen the other way. So I think it was in a class too where another woman said the same thing, like, if it would have happened, it would have, meaning somebody would have plucked you out of obscurity and put you in because you're just so beautiful, whatever you could think of. And that's how actors were actors based on my mother's generation, you know,
right,
whatever it was. But that old school way mentality. And then the mysticism behind, let's say, the great actors, the Brits, you know, they come up all the time. But there is that quiet. They've been training is what I'm saying. Like they've been training. Going to classes
for years.
Yeah. The De Niro's, the Pacino's, for years. They were training before. And people forget that. They just, I guess, see something spectacular that's on camera. And they totally disregard the years that go behind it.
And I think people want to believe in the myth that it's something you're born with. They want to believe that, no, if I'm in the right place at the right time and someone sees me and I have the right look, they're just going to pick me for this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't.
I know we want to believe that it does, but it doesn't work like that. It takes an incredible amount of training. Acting is actually an ability. It's a skill that you learn how to do. Even, you know, yes, there are introverts and there are extroverts. And someone with an extroverted personality might be more fun at a party. Mm-hmm. They're just outgoing. You know, they can slip into different character voices and do different. It doesn't mean you're going to be a great actor.
Right.
There's so many nuances to being an actor. I mean, there's the sheer amount of what must be learned, the skill side of it. Nobody is born with that. Nobody's born with that knowledge.
I just thought of a silly thing, like a little baby, like, wow, it's amazing how she just let the camera just roll right in front of her face. You know, like the technical, like this baby has talent. She could be a movie star just because it is so many things to work on.
And so I'll get, that's an argument I'll get from students sometimes. It's like, well, what about kid actors? They haven't had years of training. I'm like, no, but they're kids. They haven't been beaten down by the world yet.
Right.
There's something that happens when you're 10 and under that it's before your higher reasoning sets in, which is about age 10, which is where that's kind of your rational mind clicks in. Like before, when you're really young, when you're 6 years old, 7, 8, you pretty much, unless you've gone through some major trauma, you believe your parents, you believe your people around you. You just believe everything. And that's how we believe in myths and we believe in fantasy and fairy tale. We believe things and we just go along with it. Well, part of that ability, when we don't yet have higher reasoning, part of that ability allows these kids to also act just straight out of their imagination. Their imagination is so strong that they don't need anything else. And so they have this innate ability to just do it. Now, every single person has to then go through those puberty years when higher reasoning sets in and then insecurity sets in and self-consciousness sets in, all of those years, basically your middle school years going into high school. We can't escape it. And when you go through that, now we need the skill.
And even in college, not to interrupt, in college, because your brain, or maybe I remember like boys' brains, they don't fully form until like 24,
35,
like that. 35, well, yeah. 45, just kidding. But like our brains don't fully form until like 20 or formalize. I don't even know what logically, just the brain is still actually working things out until like 23, 22.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, and that's why, though, when you see child actors that can do such great work, not every child actor grows up to be a star.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can't navigate through those other difficult years into adulthood. You know, and sometimes with the proper training, they can. But there's a myth that you're born with it. Acting is not something that you're born with. To me, I don't believe that anyone is born with a talent. I think somebody is born with a drive. There's a difference, meaning you have passions inside of you. You might have something that is more, it's innately common to you, meaning there's a pull, whether it's towards music, whether it's towards woodworking, whether it's towards mathematics, there's something that's a pull, but then you still have to work on it.
Yeah. And there's something also to say about in regards to acting as a skill. What I find so powerful is that it allows you to take responsibility of something that you love and give it attention. It allows you to say, okay, I'm just a beginner at this, no matter what it is, but acting, and obviously particular, it's gives you like, okay, well, I'm going to learn. I'm going to go to class. I'm going to do the work. I'm going to see, it's a process, but it's like, you should be able to take that and say, okay, how I do this, my commitment to this is my responsibility, my, at least the absorbing of the information and what you decide to do with it, whether it's audition or make movies, write, whatever it is. But it is something where it's just something that it became like a responsibility for me. Like I just like, but in a beautiful way, I was able to respond to the challenge of not growing as an actor. And so I want to grow as an actor. So I take the classes.
And right.
I go, so.
And what I found is it a lot of times we want to, just as a general human race, we want to believe in the talent myth because it immediately gives us an excuse of why we're not where they are.
Yeah.
Whether that's athletics, whether that's in intellect, whether that's in an art. If we can say, oh, well, they're just born with it and I'm not, that's why they're there. Well, we're negating all of their hard work, first of all.
Yeah.
But we're giving ourselves an excuse of why we're not where we want to be. And so I think it's important that we look at that and say, no, you can be there too. You just got to work at it.
Right.
You got to put in the incredible amounts of hard work to do that. Because we feel, generally as humans, we feel that people are born with it, well, we immediately then feel that it doesn't require a lot of effort, training, everything else. And the truth is, acting demands an incredible amount of training consistently, constantly, and an incredible amount of hard work consistently and constantly. It's something we're constantly, we're honing and shaping and adapting and all of those things. Mm-hmm. We never stop. As an artist, we never stop. And that's really the secret. The secret to being a great artist is putting in the hard work of being a great artist.
Which to me is the easiest part. It means that it's like, there's time. Here's the linear, here's what I can do with it. Meaning is it's possible to just do the work. I'm not saying, you know, what happens in regards to Hollywood stardom or anything like that. I'm just saying, if you want to learn the craft of it, like there is a class, is the line, that the linear way that you can take to continue to learn so that you could do the work, so you can make the play, you can be the character, whatever that is. But it's important to know that, and it's important to hear that, because a lot of people, like you were saying, that it's important to hear that from somebody who at least you know what you're talking about. But a lot of people might even say, I don't have to do the work. What do you mean? But if somebody said, yeah, you can do this if you want to, if you are willing to do the work. And that's where I think that responsibility comes in. If you're not willing,
right,
then forget it.
And yeah, that's a good point. You have to be willing to do the work and willing to put in the time and effort that success requires.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee. I mean, as far as like being a Hollywood star, that's such a remote possibility that really, as an actor, hopefully you're not getting into acting because you want to be famous. And I know some people that I'll say that, and I just want to be famous. And typically that comes from something else. That comes from a different psychological area where feeling alone or not feeling appreciated, other things. But being famous is not the goal of art. It's expression, and it's allowing yourself to be part of something that is bigger than just you. I mean, art is beautiful. Fame is something different. They don't go hand in hand. You can be a working actor for the rest of your life and make a pretty good living doing what you love and still never be famous. Versus you could be famous and not be a good actor.
And be miserable.
Ugh. One has nothing to do with the other. And so when I talk to students who are learning how to into this craft of acting, I try to separate that out and say, listen, don't get into this to be famous. That's a totally different thing. Get into this because you love the art form and you want to learn and express and reach others through storytelling, which is really a noble cause. Do it for that. But I believe that just about anybody can do this. I don't want to say anybody, because I think there are certain faculties we need to have. But I believe if you have a will, you can do this, a will and a desire. And that's really what it takes. And I know it does take some money, because there are acting classes you need to go to and headshots you have to take, and just like, you have to have a wardrobe for going on auditions. And there's certain things that just require some money. So I know it's not easily as accessible to everyone, but it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means it might be a longer road, or for so many actors, you have to have a financial job in addition to then working on your acting on the side.
Yep.
That's okay.
Right.
You're still working on it.
Right. And that counts. Meaning is that you have the job on the side, or that is your main way to make money. And, you know, it's an investment at the end of the day too, but it's for something that you love, and it is a craft. And there's so many people who have sacrificed so much of their time. And the one who pops up in my head, he's I love him, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he says yeah. he was up at 4 a.m. He was working contractor, bodybuilding, and then acting class until like 12 o'clock at night. And he was like, but every day, it just that's what mattered. That's what I wanted it the most. I wanted to get better. You know, even he was actually one I think who initially was just based on his body he got the part, but he said I want to get better, so I started taking the classes and all this stuff. To have longevity and to know what he was doing and talking about the will. And I think that happens through the will to do it. And the will to commit, to have the financial commitment also, even if it's once a semester or during the summer, you know, or studying, or it is, everything counts. But I think the sooner that people recognize that you can't do it alone, and we're like, okay, I need tutelage. I need mentorship. Here it is. This is what I'm going to invest my money and time in, because you do what you put your time into what you love.
Yes.
And time goes very quickly.
It really does.
And then before you turn around.
And then, you know, the other thing is, like, with all of that stuff being said, there's not a shortcut into this art form. Even though you all across the globe, you might find areas that the people are trying to sell you the shortcut. And it's not just in acting. This is everywhere in life. People are trying to sell you the quick methodology, because as humans, we want the easier approach in. And since acting is something that we really don't understand, and we think it's about talent, and we think it's about you're just born with it, and we think, okay, so it's just like a couple of things, the skills. I just need to learn how to memorize and I'll be fine.
Right.
You know, we don't realize the breadth of how much it is to do this. Then it's to nobody's fault that you would think, oh, well then, yeah, I could go, oh, in 6 short classes, somebody's going to teach me everything I need to know. It's not a fault to think that. Only when you learn, only when you discover what you don't know. I always say, we always go through 3 different phases. The first one is we don't know what we don't know. And that's where ignorance is bliss. It's beginner's luck. When you don't know what you don't know, you kind of blindly are just walking the path. Well, very soon into any sort of process, you get to where you now know what you don't know, because your eyes have been opened up to all of these things. And it's like, oh, I have to wait. I have to work on my voice. I have to work on my physicality. I have to work on, you know, my mental ability and my psychology and my emotions. And like, I have to work on all of that. And it's like, yeah, all of this stuff is vitally important. Well, that's where it becomes difficult. And then, but eventually we get into this area of knowing what we know. And that's when you have the most amount of confidence. You have a process in place. You know that you can pick up, as an actor, we can pick up any script or anything, and we have a process that we can get from A to Z of what we need to do. And that's ultimately the goal. But in the meantime, so many actors just want to get there now.
Yeah.
And it's like, and when you don't know what you don't know, if your first inkling, if your first exposure to acting, if you have no experience yet, is somebody that's trying to sell you the quick method, well, you don't know any better. It's not your fault. But that's why, like, I like to talk about these things and say, listen, there is no shortcut into acting. There's not a fast way to get there. It's almost like if you're going to have open heart surgery, do you want the surgeon that really took their time through med school and really did their process and their internship and really did their residency and like all of the things, right? You want the surgeon that went through all of the training and is a master at what they do versus somebody that took an online correspondence course and somehow got their medical degree.
I had an uncle as a senator somewhere. Yeah,
right, exactly. It's like, no, you don't want that person operating on you. Ugh. Well, I, you know, and not to say that acting is as dangerous or as life-threatening as that, but it's a good comparison to understand that, well, there are certain fields that just logically we're like, no, the more education, the better, that we're going to put our trust in somebody. Mm-hmm. Well, actors, believe it or not, have to go to those lengths, that the better trained actors, the ones that have put in the time and effort and the struggle through it, are the ones that make it look easy at the top of their game. The Meryl Streeps of the world, the Viola Davises, Denzel is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. Just makes everything look easy and effortless.
All the Brits.
All the British, Australian, the South American, like all of the actors that, and it's simply because we don't realize, like, why are the British actors so good? They're not born that way. They've just trained harder than other people.
How long do you think that they were going to school for?
The Brits train for on an average 8 years.
Yeah.
It's they come out of university. Mm-hmm. If they're training already, they come out of university with that training. They go into conservatory, mm-hmm. the conservatory, which is more of just a focused training. They go mm-hmm. into something called repertory. Repertory is where they're doing stage performances just over mm-hmm. and over and over, night after night. You know, it's a very intensive environment into stage. And usually it's not until they're about the age of 30 or so that mm-hmm. they'll come over and do American film.
Yeah.
That's if they've been working on it since high school. So it's an amazing thing.
It's like, an amazing thing.
It's like, wow, that's a lot of freaking training. That's why our first exposure to them, and we think, oh my God, they came out of nowhere and they're amazing. It's like, no, yeah. They've been acting for a decade. They've been training for a decade. But we're not used to them because we're not over in the UK. So we're not seeing them on stage.
We just see them when they're here taking all the Marvel. I always think of all the Marvel movies, like Superman's British and yada yada is British and, you know, and Magneto and all these amazing people that you would just think that might have been American because they have American accents. And you're like, wait a second, because they're just so brilliant.
They're just so good. And they've worked on voice. They've worked on physicality. They've worked on emotion. They've worked on it over and over and over for years. Of course, someone always wants to throw something else. Oh, yeah, but what about Tom Holland? He was so young and he did it. Tom Holland was raised in British theater.
Right. There's so many
he
as well.
He was raised in British theater. I mean,
they had their parents, and this is not to take away, but they have their parents too, who some of them were playwrights. Like they're in the house of an artist.
Yes.
So they were cultivated at a young age to be able to do these things. And for those out there, the teenagers, I love when the teenagers come and take classes and stuff, because it just sets them up if they commit.
Yes.
My goodness, it sets them up for such an incredible journey forward with their career, wherever they want to do with it. But they get so much at so young. Oh my gosh, it's incredible to me how they do that. But those Brits over there, they all really love theater. They love the art. They love acting. Was it you or someone else who said that they over there, the Brits actually respect actors as much as they do doctors, like the profession? It's a
cultural mm-hmm. thing where when you go to different cultures and especially in some of the territories, like, you know, even Toronto or, you know, Canada, you know, Australia, the mm-hmm. UK, there's a greater respect for the art. Yeah. We just happen to live in a capitalistic society in the US where we prize money and accumulation of things over other stuff. Everyone still wants to do these things, but they look at it as a hobby, not as what you need to do for money. So here in the US, when, you know, someone says, oh, what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm an actor. They're like, oh, okay, but what do you do for money? Is the follow-up question. Uh-huh. What do you do for money? And it's like, why should that matter?
Yeah.
I'm an actor. That's what I am. Or, you know, and for me, it's funny. I can say I'm a teacher and it's like, I believe it or not, here in the States, being a teacher does not equate to money.
Yeah.
We teach.
Like, but what are you doing for a living?
Right. Exactly. Teacher. It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, teaching, we teach because we love it.
Because you love it.
Not because we're getting rich by it. But it is an interesting thing that over there, the culture supports the arts.
Yeah.
So it's not almost a taboo thing that you're doing.
Sure.
I have so many students that even when I say even here in the arts, it doesn't matter if it's acting, if it's being a musician, if it's being mm-hmm. a filmmaker, mm-hmm. it's like, man, I, cause I teach at the local university here too. And I teach film And so many of my students tell me about how their parents don't really like the fact when they say, oh, I want to go in for film. And they're like, no, what about engineering? What about law? Right. What about medical? What about business? What about something else that that equates
anything,
to money?
Anything but film and acting.
And this comes right back to where we started this whole conversation today, the duality of the human psyche. It comes back to logic. It comes back to the safety mechanism. Parents and other people are thinking about safety, which in most societies equate to money. So it's like, oh, if you do something that can give you more money, then you'll be more safe. And we don't realize that money does not bring us happiness. It's money does give us the ability to go on another day. And yes, it in our particular society is important, but it's not the happiness factor. We have to do things to make us happy, which is why most artists, I say, listen, yes, have a job where you can survive. It's your survival job. You're making enough money to pay rent. Mm-hmm. You're making enough money to have clothes on your back and food, and do that.
Yes.
Then minimalize everything else. Don't buy anything you don't need.
Nope.
And put everything else into your what makes you happy, whatever that is. You know, I'm not saying that acting is going to make everyone happy. No, find what makes you happy. Find that thing that you would do regardless of money. That if you did not have to worry about money, what would you want to do day in and day out? That's what you need to do day in and day out in some way. And then just get that job, that survival job, get a couple part-time jobs, even if a full-time, sometimes full-time jobs are restrictive. Good, get two part-time jobs. Yep. Whatever you need to do.
Where there's a will, there's a way. And hopefully, you know, you guys have friends that you can chat about to help you get out of that linear or, you know, logical mind thought process, because it still is going to take time. Like whatever you decide to do, it's going to take time. But with acting, especially, like acting is action, you know, so you have to put the action towards that, commit the time to that, even if it is once a week, twice a week classes, whatever it is. But no decision is still a decision.
Yes. Yeah.
And if I could say anything to people out there, it's like, decide, see where you want the quality over quantity. What is it that you want your life to look like? And then schedule out how it would look, commit a day, 2 days a week, but little by little. But don't do nothing.
Yeah. Complacency leads to mediocrity. We don't just want to wait. There's never a good time to do anything.
Never.
And when you wait for that perfect time, that perfect moment, it just doesn't come. It's much better. If you have a desire to do something, start doing it. And starting could simply be research and read and just any little step that you can do. As I was saying earlier, even about the duality, it's like just start by working on yourself. Start breaking down any sort of internal negativity that you have and figure out where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You can do your own therapeutic process that way. But it's take that first step.
Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you, Nat, for this
thank
a good
you,
conversation
Marco.
Today. Really enjoyed this one.
I enjoyed
so,
this as well.
And hopefully everyone out there did too. And you can tune back in. We'll be back again soon with another episode. But thank you so much for listening. It was great, great, great being with you all. And can't wait to do this again.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about our studio and what we do, you can find us online at truthfulacting.com. And check out truthfulactingonline.com for our Learn at Home at Your Own Pace courses.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I know what you're trying to do.
I'm trying to free your mind. But I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it.